So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game! It's all about the game, and how you play it. All about control, and if you can take it. All about your stand, and if you can play it. It's all about pain,
and who's gonna make it?
I am the game, you don't wanna play me.
I am control,
no way you can shake me.
I am heavy debt,
no way you can pay me.
I am the pain,
and I know you can't take me.
Look over your shoulder, ready to run, like a Cleveland bitch from a smoking gun.
I am the game,
and I make the rules. So move on out, you can die like a fool.
Try to figure out what my mood's gonna be.
Come on over, sucker, why don't you ask me?
Don't you forget there's a price you can pay.
Cause I am the game and I want to play.
Check out littlepolitics.com for all the latest. And while you're there, check out our sponsors. Yep, you heard me right. Every time you click on the link to our sponsors, guess what? We get paid and we get to keep doing this stuff. So we appreciate your help. In the meantime, looks like Ed Martin is going to be a little bit late. I'm going to go ahead and open the phones early because we're going to have a lot to talk about. And you guys will probably want to get involved. The call-in numbers, as usual, 858-683-1326. Or you can reach us in Louisville area at 502-805-0334. For you guys in the listening queue, all you need to do is hit that little number one on your dial pad as usual. And for everybody else, join our live chat. Or you can also IM at myviewmatters@AOL.com if you're an AOL subscriber. Okay, on with business. I want to get into the Barbara Shanklin deal in just a second, but I'm going to start with Allison Lundergan Grimes. It's really interesting because, you know, WFPL.org carried the story today with Allison Lundgren Grimes mentioning that she was going to go ahead and run against Mitch McConnell. And I thought it was funny because the headline read, "Allison Lundgren Grimes comes out." You got to read a little further. Then you see she comes out swinging against Mitch McConnell. But I thought that was interesting considering, you know, hey, what the heck? Because everybody in this town wants to pay attention to the single agenda, which seems to be the Democrats' calling card. How are you, Mr. Martin? Hello, Mr. Martin.
Yes, sir.
Ah, there he is. Not bad, sir. Not bad. As everybody knows by now, we're starting the show. Allison Lundgren Grimes decided she's going to come out and run against Mitch McConnell. Big surprise to the whole world, right? It's interesting. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and I just gloated on a couple friends' pages back when John Yarmuth was all, you know, good. And many Democrats that you and I know.
Ed, you're breaking up real bad, my friend. I'm not sure why. I'm not sure if it's your cell phone or what. Okay. But anyway, just break back in when you get good sound, Ed. All right? And we'll pick you up right away. It is interesting because John Yarmuth was out there touting Ashley Judd. The whole world was touting Ashley Judd.
Can you hear me now?
There now. Oh, I can hear you great now. Thank you. Go ahead with your Ashley Judd thing because I think I know where you're going with that.
Well, yes. But, I mean, you remember when Ashley Judd, everybody was like, Harvard, great. She's so great. And I don't know why John Yarmuth, thought she was a great pick, for reasons that we knew right away. But, I just had a little gloat there. I mean, I'm a Republican, but even back when everybody was all frothy and saying, Ashley Judd, I said, what's she stand for? What's your policy position? What's your experience,
That's the whole thing.
People were all like, how can you hate on Ashley like that? And I was like, girl, I'm not hating on her. I just want to know what she's about. And I told people, I said, look, she's going to run a candidate. Jack Conway's he's a dead fish. But, Allison Lemons and Grimes, I was telling them, that's your best candidate. You ought to quit doing the Ashley Judd thing and focus on somebody that's actually got a little going on the ball.
Well, I got to be honest with you here. And, some people are going to listen to this show and think I'm losing my mind, but it's the gospel truth. I have no doubt whatsoever in my mind. It wasn't Mitch McConnell and the leaked illegal recording. Ashley Judd had already announced she was getting out of the race before that recording was ever made public by Kurt Morrison and Sean Riley. Ashley Judd was approached by Sean Riley before this recording went public and before she made the announcement. There was a private meeting involving him, according to my inside sources, and they're never wrong, folks. That's why she got out of the race. Sean Riley was working on behalf of Allison Lundgren and Grimes, and she was involved and instrumental and forcing Ashley Judd out of the race. These were the Democrats eating their own. This was not Mitch McConnell. If you know the dates and the times of the recording, it proves everything I'm saying is right. So here's the deal. Allison Lundgren and Grimes went out there, and she forced Ashley Judd from the race. I don't think there was any doubt in anybody's mind, including yours, from the very beginning, that she was going to be the one that was going to run against McConnell. Now, she does have a primary, but come on, that's just a formality for her name because she's got name recognition. But does Allison Lundgren Grimes, think about it. She's going to give up the office of Secretary of State, and she's going to go running for the Senate, the U.S. Senate. When we talk about what qualifications do you have and everything else, being the daughter of a flip-flopper and party switcher qualifies her for the U.S. Senate? I'm asking you. I don't get it.
Maybe.
I agree. This Senate, yes. But Secretary of State, come on. And she's only going to have what? She ain't even been there a year yet. And now she's already going to have to spend all her time campaigning. So she's not doing her job properly. She's going to spend most of her daggone first term as an elected official to Secretary of State doing nothing more than campaigning for a U.S. Senate going after Mitch McConnell. She doesn't have the qualifications either. All she's got is name recognition, but she comes from that Democrat political family. John Yarmuth is just looking for a name that he could try to sell based on connections. That's why I liked Ashley Judd. Ashley Judd was just a big-time name. Everybody knew that she was a lunatic. And there's a lot of things I'll be outing on. Well, let's just say Allison Lundgren Grimes isn't going to like a whole lot of things coming her way in a few months, okay? But there's a lot of things there that are very disturbing about her history and the way that her family does business and things like that. And, of course, we will lead the way at Louisville Politics and out that behavior just as we have Jim King, Katie King, Judy Green, and the list goes on and on and on. She has got more problems than everybody knows, and once we get those out there, she's not going to be a factor at all. But it is interesting that the Democrats, once again, are just looking for the name and not the quality. It's the same. It's almost like they're pulling the same game, Ed. I mean, we complain about the Republicans being scared to lead. The Democrats just want somebody that's going to follow their master, whatever they tell them. That's Allison Lundgren Grimes. I just don't see her beating Mitch McConnell. I really don't, and I'm not sure she's going to survive the primary. She may decide it's in her best interest to drop out of the primary for her health. They always use that excuse, my health. So she might use that. Yeah, I think you're in, I think it's going to be an interesting turn of events. But
yeah.
In the meantime,
well,
there is going to be a primary.
I think the interesting thing is that, the thing I'm figuring is you look at it, Ashley wouldn't run, Conway wouldn't run. If I was going to pick somebody to run, I would have liked to see Mongiardo take another run at him. Because, we know Dan Mongiardo. He's a nice guy. He's a good guy. But, when you see an incumbent run like this,
The interesting thing with Mongiardo, though, is, man, he stepped on a lot of toes. Bashir can't stand him. That's why he wasn't lieutenant governor for the second term. Mongiardo does not toe the party line. He doesn't play well.
That's one of the reasons we kind of like the guy. But
I think
that's what I'm saying. I'm just throwing that name out there. My God, if John Yarmouth can throw Ashley Judd out there, I can throw Dan Mongiardo out there. But I think the thing is, and I would love, and you would too. You just love to know what she's getting for it, because it's Mitch and he has a war chest and he's kind of Mitch plays rough. Love him or hate him, Mitch plays rough. And you know what? Sometimes I see what he does sometimes, and how hard he hits. How hard people get hit in campaigns sometimes. And you just got to sit there and wonder. It's like, God, by the time they get done with it, the person running might not even vote for themselves. And they might learn to hate themselves when it's all said and done. But I'm just wondering what she got. Because it has to be part of the discussion. Okay, Allison, are you going to run? And if she says, yes, I'm going to run.
Well,
what assurances do I have that if I don't win after running, putting the effort in, what assurances do I have that, let's say I want to run for AG or I want to run for, I want a lieutenant governor, I want to run for governor. Am I going to be primary? What do you get in return? It's like, okay, look, Allison, you're gonna take on Mitch, name your next race, the machine will make sure you don't get primary, something like that.
Right. And it's interesting, too. I can't remember which source it was. I read a ton of different stories today, but the first one I read on it was through WFPL, and that's why I'm giving them credit for it. But there was one story that asked a pretty interesting question, I thought. Why is she announcing it today, July the 1st, the week of 4th of July, Independence? Why is she announcing this today? I don't know why she was going to wait this long. She didn't wait another week to make the announcement. I just thought it was a pretty interesting timing, to say the least. And she will be in a Democratic primary, and we've already got three other people that have said they're going to run. Owensboro contractor Ed Marksberry, his name is fairly known. Louisville music promoter Benny Smith largely will be ignored. And University of Louisville professor Craig Letici, those three people have announced their bid for the Democratic primary. Two of them you can discount. I think Ed Marksberry will probably be the best candidate against Allison Lundigan Grimes. But ultimately, if she decides she's going to beat Mitch after everything I put out later this year or the beginning of the year, then she's really going to have to understand. If she happens to stay in the primary, she's going to have to understand she's going to get her butt beat badly. And I think ultimately she's being put up as a sacrificial lamb. What does she hope to gain by running in this race at this time?
The libertarians do it, I can tell you, because and rightfully so, and the Republicans do it, and I've talked to a lot of people in the parties, Democrat, Republican, but the thing that they really hate to see is somebody run uncontested. They hate that, because that's like waving the white flag before the battle even starts. So, the Democrats, I think, were at a point that they had to put somebody up, and I think she probably, honestly, she may have negotiated from a point of power, saying, look, I'll do this. If I win, I get to be whatever. You don't control me because whatever. Or, and she says, if I lose, this is what I want down the road.
And you betcha.
The Democrat Party was not in a position to say no.
Well, you're right. They didn't have any known names.
You don't want to get humiliated on that scale. You don't want to wave the white flag or not show up for the fight on that scale. So they had to give her whatever she wanted to do this.
Well, we're going to go to the phones real quick, but I want to put this out there real quick first, though. And, Paul, we'll be right with you. The one thing that I think ultimately, the only shot she's got, you know, President Obama lost Kentucky big. You know, and Mitch McConnell is already coming out of the gate trying to tie her into Obama and Obamacare and all the other stuff. And quite frankly, I have no doubt he's right about it, and I'm not a Mitch McConnell fan. She's just going to toe the rope and toe the water and do everything she's told to do. But Mitch McConnell's base, you know, is going to include some areas that have a lot of Democrats. Now, they're not the majority, but they're going to have a lot of Democrats. And I think ultimately he might be using the wrong tactic trying to make this election all about Obama, because people already know what Obama is, and it may be too much. I don't know. I'm not sure yet. Paul, you're on, man. What's going on?
Well, Ed, I agree with your last statement. I think the Republicans make a huge mistake by bashing Obama. I think it's overkill, number one. But, mm-hmm. you know, since the Republicans are so ineffective in a lot of ways, I'd love to see them paint a picture of their vision for Kentucky. And I just don't think we're going to get that, okay? And going back to Ed Martin's contention that the parties are in this mindset where rather than not field a candidate, they will go ahead and put, in your words, a sacrificial lamb up just to say that they showed up on the field of battle. Well, if you're going to get slaughtered, you know, why do you want to sacrifice people just to say I fought a good battle? And that goes back to the entire Republican mindset, Ed and Ed. If you're going to go to battle, why are you simply saying it's okay to sacrifice one of ours just to say that we fought a good battle? When you go to battle, you're supposed to go to battle to win.
Right.
If you're not going to go to battle to win, why waste the resources? Why waste the human capital? Why create ill will? I don't understand that.
I'll weigh in on that. I think if you look at the Kentucky 3, the congressional race the last go around, I think that was a sacrificial lamb. Only one person signed up to run, and they didn't get any support. And as we discussed on this show, if you get shellacked, it's not so much the race that you're losing. Right now, there's this whole thing is it's like, wow, you know, they didn't even put up a good fight in KY3, so how are you going to get anybody to enlist for the fight next time? So, you know, you at least want, you know, you want to see somebody get, you know, you want to see a couple good fights. Just like fighting Mike Tyson, you go out, go bap, you know, you get dropped in the first round. Nobody wants to fight you, but they want to see somebody hang with him a little bit. Then maybe the next fight comes along and can take it 2 years, or Mitch doesn't run again, and you know, you don't look like a wet noodle of a party saying, oh, whew, he's finally gone.
But your analogy, the problem with your analogy is that in the case of Mike Tyson, he's got a coach who really cares about him. You know, the Republican Party in Kentucky, and particularly Republican Party in Jefferson County, those people don't care about their candidates. They just don't care.
They've made it clear that they care about Mitch McConnell, but nobody else, especially on a local level. I agree with you there.
There you go. I'll give you that.
I'm just curious what Lonergan Grimes thinks she's going to change it. I mean, here's the deal for me. Everybody knows her daddy. Everybody knows what he's been involved in and everything else. So I'm sure there's a payoff to the family somewhere. I think realistically they expect her to lose, but they wanted a name up there that they could say they gave the best possible shot to. I ultimately don't know why Lonergan Grimes is allowing herself to be used this way. She's not going to survive it. I can promise you that. I've got the evidence now to play games with that for quite a while, but I'll wait until the timing is right. But I cannot for the life of me understand why she allowed herself to be used this way, because all indications are that this is probably Mitch McConnell's last election. All indications tell us that Mitch will be done after this next election. He has no desire to stay in office beyond that. You know, so then you're going to get an open primary from a two-party system, and then you put somebody like an Alison Lonergan Grimes up who has a name recognition. But if she gets hammered this time, like Jack Conway did during his whole Aqua Buddha campaign, she's essentially done. She's essentially done, and she's 34 years old. You know,
well, she's done it. I think she's done it as the U.S. Senate race goes, at least for a while. But I think she's parlaying this. You know, it's like, look, I'm going to put up a good fight. I'm going to represent you well. I'm not going to make you, you know, not going to get trounced and whatever. And I think she's parlayed it, you know, in the event of a loss, into the party machine backing her up with no questions asked.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, there's no doubt that on a state level, on a Kentucky level, you know, she's kissing the right butt and holding the right hands to make sure that she's going to have some sort of career, you know, as just another welfare recipient, you know, we call elected officials in Kentucky, okay? So we know that's going to happen. You know, but on a national stage, she's done if she loses to McConnell big, and all of the cases are if she decides to go through that race, and I hope she understands when everything comes out, that's probably the stupidest mistake she ever made. But if she decides to follow through with it by next year, you know, her national career is simply over. I don't think there's any way around that. You know, I just don't get the big picture here. But I'm like you guys, though. You know, my dad once told me when I was growing up, and more than once, you know, he would tell me all the time because I, you know, I've been a little outspoken my whole life. For those of you who don't know me,
I know what your dad told you when you were growing up.
Well, other than shut up,
he told you you're ugly and your mother dresses you funny.
That's part of it. That's true. That's true. But you know, Babby, you know, the thing is, when it comes to politics, anything you do in your life, you really need to pick your battles. And I think that Paul is right. It's overkill from the Republicans. They're continuing to try to screw with Obama. Obama is a lame duck president. He's got all kinds of problems right now. You keep adding fuel to the fire will ultimately make that fire burn out. You put so much fuel on it, it's almost like water. And that's what they're doing now. And they're wrong about that because it's going to hurt them on the national scene. However, you know, the real issue is here, you don't fight the fight you know you can win. Okay? You fight the fight that needs fighting. There's no way Alison Lonergan Grimes can win this race once everything comes out and she goes through the background check. And as usual, mainstream will follow my lead. There's no way she can survive that. And I don't see why you're picking a battle that you know you're going to lose because there's nothing to be obtained here. So it's kind of a weird situation. Now, if we were talking about Crit Llewellyn, hey, man, that's a candidate, Democrat, that I could sit here and talk about and have a good time with. But Alison Lonergan Grimes is no Crit Llewellyn, and she's no U.S. Senator. So we're going to have to pay attention to that going forward. Another story. Paul, I'm going to leave you online. You might like this one, too. Everybody knows Barbara Shanklin. You know, apparently, she is still trying to play some legal maneuvering and all the other stuff. Well, Paul, I'm actually going to put you in a queue. I'm getting background noise, okay?
Yeah.
Just hit me again if you want to come on. Apparently, Barbara Shanklin, as we know, her attorney, for lack of a better word, Aubrey Williams, is continuing to try to play the game with the records, the courts and everything else, trying to get her out of trouble. Well, here's the thing. The person at question here is Linda Haywood. She was the instructor at the upholstery class that became a point of contention that started this whole show and this ethics problem. It's interesting because Barbara Shanklin has said she didn't do anything wrong. But Linda Haywood said that she went to Barbara Shanklin asking for advances because she didn't have money to buy Christmas presents for her grandkids or if her upholstery class paychecks were late. And according to Haywood, this is public record, according to Haywood, Barbara would write her a check for $300 or $400, and she never once looked to see where the check was coming from. And that when Haywood paid Barbara Shanklin back, she paid her back in cash most of the time. Now, why is this relevant to this case? Well, it's very relevant simply because Barbara Shanklin was the one writing the checks out of the daggone Newburgh neighborhood. She was the one writing checks out of that account. Those checks were written to Linda Haywood. If they were supposed to be personal loans, then Barbara Shanklin should have written them from her own personal account. And if they were personal loans and Haywood paid her back in cash, why don't we have deposit receipts or bank records to show that Barbara Shanklin redeposited the money and made that fund whole? See where I'm going with that, Ed?
Oh, yeah.
There you go. And, you know, so Haywood's telling the police that after the question started on all of this stuff, Barbara Shanklin actually confronted her and insisted that Linda Haywood had always reimbursed Shanklin for the loans by check. You know, she was trying to make Linda Haywood essentially lie. There's no doubt about that based on the story. And I'm actually going to let you guys, this is the Courier Journal. You can read this. I hate giving these guys credit for anything. But they did. And, you know, Shanklin was trying to force her to say that she had reimbursed Shanklin by check. And then, of course, Shanklin can find any receipt she wants to. You know, so it was really interesting. And then Haywood said that she insisted that she had repaid Shanklin with cash. Shanklin responded to her, "No, no, 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 I never take cash." That's setting the stage for your defense. You know what I mean? She knew she was screwed. That happens every day. What do you think about that? This is pretty interesting, especially when Haywood says that Shanklin told her when all this was coming down that she wanted to talk to her because they didn't have any records of where the money was paid back. Go ahead.
Well, if you don't have any records of the money paid back, then, you know, look, this could be solved pretty quickly. I mean, it's a little deep, but the banks keep they keep microfiche records of all your checks that you write. And, of course, if you kept your bank statement, you'd be able simply to show, even without a copy of the check, where the amount of money came out. So, I mean, this is so easily solved. You know, this is a non-argument. Either you produce the documentation if you wrote a check, or you deposited a check, cashed a check. It's out there somewhere, you know. If she didn't write it, you know, if she says she didn't write a check, and Barbara's saying she does, and says, okay, fine, you know, when did this happen? I'll go back and pull up the bank statements from that point in time, and she can,
mm-hmm.
I guess you could print your own and make it look official, but still, it's easily backed up if you write a check. That's why, I mean, I hate to sound terrible, but that's why if I give the charity, I never give cash, you know, because
right.
I want proof that I did it. So
exactly.
What this is if we've got somebody loaning money with a check, and, you know, especially if it wasn't her personal money, and it was coming back, that's plain and simple. That's laundering. That's laundering money 101. That's all that is.
Which makes it even more comical that the special prosecutor or Jack Conway's office and everybody else did not bring any criminal charges. And that's only because Barbara Shanklin, as we've said many times on this show, Barbara Shanklin knows where the bodies are buried, and she probably helped dig the holes. They're too scared to bring her up on criminal charges. But they've got to do something. I've said from the beginning that I think Barbara will probably get away with this to some degree. Will she be, you know, hurt from a public, you know, standpoint, the way we look at her? Yeah, sure, there's going to be some people who are going to have negative feelings. But, you know, Judy Greene didn't get the protection that Barbara Shanklin is getting. And I think we're going to see that going forward, even though Barbara Shanklin has done the same thing that Judy Greene did. And it's really interesting, too, because Linda Haywood was saying that when Barbara told her all this was coming down and they couldn't find any record where any of the money was paid back that she had given her a check for, you know, Barbara was saying, no, no, I never take cash. But she insisted she took cash. So Barbara tried a different approach. Barbara's trying to say, you know, when Linda Haywood told her, well, I paid you back, Barbara's saying, well, do you think you forgot? And Linda Haywood makes a great point here. She says, forget? Why would you lend me money a second time if I forgot to pay you back the first time? And then Shanklin, well, maybe we both forgot. So she's clearly setting the stage.
Okay, look, if you saw Barbara Shanklin at her hearing, I hate to say it, but that's not that big a stretch.
I know. I understand, you know. It's very interesting.
I agree with you on the bodies and stuff. But, I mean, I'm sure Barbara Shanklin is a sweet old woman, the grandma-type old lady. But if anybody in the little area has seen this woman in action, she is not the sharpest tool in the shed. I'm sorry.
Barbara Shanklin in public.
Councilman Gary D. Miller is the sharpest tool in the shed, bar none. But,
well,
but But she's not the sharpest tool in the shed. So I kind of sometimes, as we've said before, I kind of wonder, you know, this is like money laundering 102. Money laundering 101 is where you say, I write you a check for $150. You give me $125 back. Cool. You
know, right.
That's the other amateur way of doing it. But I have to wonder, having seen her in action, did somebody, you speak of the bodies being buried.
Right.
I got a sneaky feeling she's not the only one that plays this game.
Well, we know she's not the only one that plays this game.
Writing checks and then taking and getting paid back, or writing checks and, you know, and benefiting from writing checks or something. I think you're right. I think that's why there's this sort of, they're not, it's just not real aggressive. It's like, you know, whether it's bodies buried or whether it's who her mentor was, you know, who got on her side and said, hey, let me show you how this works for a little jingle in your pocket every once in a while.
Well, there's no doubt that this is common behavior for I would venture to say most of the Metro Council, maybe not all, but most of the Metro Council, Republicans and Democrats alike, folks, this isn't a one party versus another party. This is a unit party. They all have a lot of common interests that are illegal and guilty as hell. It's just interesting to me because, you know, you can't find any deposit slips. You can't find any checks that Haywood supposedly paid her back for, but Haywood did pay her back in cash. There's no record that anything was deposited into the Newburgh Community Council. And when it comes to Barbara Shanklin, I've got to say this. I've spoken with Barbara Shanklin on a few occasions, you know, out and about doing the things I do. And, you know, Barbara Shanklin showed up for the Judy Greene thing. And, you know, Barbara Shanklin tried to throw Judy Greene under the bus and did. You know, they say karma is a bitch. And I think this is karma. I know Barbara Shanklin comes off as not being the brightest tool in the tool shed to some people. But let me tell you from personal experience, make no mistake, she's sharp as hell. She knows how to play that game very, very well. So we'll see what happens going forward. But my bet is they're already looking for a way out. And the rate things are going, they just might get it. Because I don't think the council really has the guts to get rid of two council members, especially with both of them being Democrats. But that's my opinion. We're going to take our bottom of the hour break just a minute or two late. We'll be right back. When we get back, we're going to switch gears a little bit, Ed. The talk of the town for the last week has been the George Zimmerman trial. Yes. So let's get into it. Let's talk race. Why and I. Listen to the S-Spring show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities.
Well, I see.
All right. We are back. Yes, Radio Show, right on the radio, definitely. Don't forget to call our numbers, 858-683-1326, or you can reach us in the Louisville area, 502-805-0334. And for you guys in the listening queue right now, we appreciate you being there. And just go ahead and hit that little number one on your dial pad if you want to be heard on air, and we will get you on as soon as we can. You know, Ed, one of the biggest stories going on for the last week is they finally started the trial on George Zimmerman. For anybody who's been hiding under a rock for the last year or so, you know, last year George Zimmerman shot Trayvon Martin. George Zimmerman was described as a white Hispanic. They even made up a new racial term for this guy. But apparently George Zimmerman, the whole world should know by now, was patrolling his neighborhood as part of a block watch program. Trayvon Martin was running around in a hoodie, not known to that neighborhood because he didn't live there. His father did. He had just been suspended from school for 10 days for hitting a bus driver and a few other things. And anyway, he was walking home, raining outside in the dark. George Zimmerman saw him, called the non-emergency dispatch number at the local police like he was trained to do. Had one of them to come out and check this guy out because they'd had a recent rash of burglaries in his neighborhood. Anyway, while he's on the phone, he lost sight of him for a minute, decided he was going to go ahead and follow him. Once the dispatcher told him not to follow, he immediately turned around, according to what we were told, immediately turned around and started working his way back to the car when allegedly Trayvon Martin decided to confront him and ask why he was following him. At the time, Trayvon Martin happened to be on the phone with his girlfriend, or supposed girlfriend, I guess, and he was talking to her the whole time he was on the phone while he was being followed and everything else, and then his phone went dead apparently when they hit the ground. Zimmerman says that Trayvon Martin attacked him, presumably for following him, and was bashing his head into the concrete sidewalk at these condos. Pictures and evidence from the police that night clearly show Zimmerman's nose bloody and marks on the back of his head that would be consistent with his story. The police initially refused to bring charges, and then because Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, who are the biggest racists in this damn country, like to keep the black people fired up and make everything about race so that they can get paid because that's how they make their money, went down to Florida, started these mass protests, and lo and behold, we're going to have a new look at the evidence. We're going to have somebody else look at the evidence, and George Zimmerman is now on trial for second-degree murder. Here's the prosecution thought, I guess, that they had a open-and-shut case here, Ed. But half of their witnesses last week, the prosecution is putting on their case. Half of their witnesses made the prosecution look stupid. I mean, even back in March, they've used Trayvon Martin's girlfriend, or his former girlfriend, you know, they used her as one of their star witnesses. But her stories have been so inconsistent. You know, even the prosecution admitted back in March, based on the three or four times she'd been interviewed, that Trayvon Martin's girlfriend lied under oath and committed perjury. Now, they're not going to bring charges against her, but she committed perjury, and they still put her on the stand as a key witness. You have no credibility here, and this was supposed to be the nail in the coffin, so to speak. How do they justify putting on this garbage trial? All indications are that Zimmerman's story was accurate, or at least fairly accurate. I mean, you know, it's hard to be 100% in that kind of a situation. But how do you justify, number one, keeping this out there in the public eye over race, and number two, something that's clearly self-defense, you're going to ruin a guy's life over?
Well, I think as far as keeping it out in the public eye, it's what the public wants. I mean, it's as we say oftentimes, the media is lazy, and this is a lazy media story. It's got all those elements you want. It's got all that, you know. It's got hatred. It's got war mystery. It's got gunplay. It's got gang banger or whatever. It's got the racial element. Now it's got this emotional element where you've got people say, you know, you hear these strange quotes. I don't know who said it or how many people said it, but, you know, it's like, oh, well, if Zimmerman gets off, we're going to go kill us some white boys or something.
All right.
Like, It's the perfect story for a garbage laden, lazy ass media is what it is. Because
sure.
You know, in the meantime, hundreds upon hundreds of Trayvon Martins have been gunned down by other Trayvon Martins in New York, L.A., and Chicago.
And that's exactly it. And nobody wants to pay attention to that. And additionally, we've got a mass wave of black-on-white mob violence going on across this country. The mainstream media refuses to report it because the black people are the perpetrators and the white people are the victims. So they refuse to do this. So when we talk about equal or fair reporting, and this isn't a racist angle here, folks. I'm not trying to come off as a racist because I'm anything but, in my opinion. But it's clearly obvious that there is a preset agenda here, and that's what makes this story so alarming, because we really, truly have to start comprehending and understanding what's going on in this country. And the media is not allowing that. They want to continue to appease the race baiters at the expense of you know, what's right and what's wrong. That's a problem for me, Ed. And when we look at this, I mean, here's the thing.
I don't even think they're trying to appease the race baiters. Again, I just think if you have a lazy media, you know, if they don't have a puppy stuck in a pipe, or if they don't have a big fire or a big explosion that they can talk about, then this is a failsafe.
Well, I think you're right about that. As we know, the media follows my lead on everything anyway, here locally. I mean, the mainstream media here locally, they only do the stories I report, and they come through a week later to try to take credit for it and put it back out there again. They're just rehashing my stuff. So you're right, we do have a lazy media. They could do what I do every day, and I would never have to do anything. I could ramble on the radio, but I wouldn't have to worry about doing all the research, the open records request, all the other stuff that they've got money and a machine to do for them that we don't have, you know. That's why it takes us so long to nail somebody. Let's go to the phones. This is our 805 number. How are you, caller?
Hey, it's Mayo and Ed.
Mayo, how are you, sir?
Oh, pretty good. I mean, glad you brought that up because, I mean, something that's bugged me, I don't know if, when you say his girlfriend, if you're talking about the heavyset lady on the stand.
The 19-year-old, yeah.
Bangs.
Yes, you know, the 19-year-old.
Yeah, and it was just funny. She's 19. God, thought she was 30-something. But, I mean, her comment when the defense asked, well, what made you think it was a racial thing? Well, when Trayvon told me that this creepy-ass cracker was following him. Well.
Right. But that's not racist.
He asked, well, that's not racist? No.
No. I mean, ask him. That's not racist. It's,
you know,
okay.
Cracker's not racist.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm being sarcastic here. And I'm totally with you. I'm totally with you on it. And that seems to be a major problem. We don't seem to have any kind of consistency here on anything other than the fact that mainstream media wants to say white people are bad, black people are good, and nobody else can do anything about it. You know, it's designed intentionally, in my opinion, to keep us divided. And that's the problem for me. We're going to actually get into a discussion about race probably next week. I'm trying to wait. I've got a couple of things working now. But I really want to get into this because by the end of this week, for the most part, they should have just about everything they need for the trial to start getting the jury ready to go. But if you look at everything on play, it's like the judge in this case. And this goes all the way up to the judge in this case. There is evidence that she is suppressing, that she will not allow the defense to put on. There's all kind of, like, the pictures of Trayvon smoking a blunt, holding a gun, bragging about selling this stuff to his friends. So he personally, you know, he's already admitted before he died. And I'm not saying that he should have died. I'm not saying George Zimmerman should have shot him and killed him. But if it's self-defense, you have to do what you got to do. I wouldn't hesitate in that situation either. But here's a guy who the media tried to portray as this up-and-coming Sunday school, you know, preacher man's son or something. That he was as pure as the driven snow, and we find out he's nothing but a thug. But the judge won't allow evidence that would prove that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, picture you see that the lamestream media has shown, it's like he's 13 or 12 years old with this innocent-looking face.
Right.
But, you know, the other pictures you were mentioning, unless you kind of know where to look or somebody's archived them, they've disappeared.
Well, they're still on Google all over the place, and I looked at some more today. I mean, here's a kid with gold teeth, tattoos everywhere, smoking a blunt, talking about killing people. He's obviously racist if you go to this No Limit Nigga, which they've wiped off of Twitter now. That was the name of it. I'm not, you know, doing anything here. You know, it was at No Limit Ticket. That's been wiped off of Twitter. And you look at his tweets and everything else, it's clear that this guy was nothing but trouble. You know, that he liked to start fights and he hated white people. But you're not allowed to prove any of that in court because he's dead. And I'll tell you another thing that was real interesting at the whole start of this trial. You know, at the very start of it, George Zimmerman's parents were told they could not sit in the courtroom because mm-hmm. they made potential witnesses. What were they going to witness? They may be potential witnesses called to the stand to tell the jury that the screams on a 911 tape belonged to George Zimmerman, so they weren't allowed to sit in the courtroom. Now, Trayvon Martin's parents, on the other hand, testified during questioning that they thought the screams on that, well, I'm sorry, Trayvon Martin's mother said she thought the screams on that belonged to Trayvon. His father, at the very beginning, said those screams were not his son's. So, you know, now all of a sudden the father has recanted that. Now they both agree that it's his, that there's Trayvon screams on there. And they're going to be called as witnesses to testify what they think, the same exact situation that Zimmerman's parents are on. But they're allowed to be in the courtroom and allowed to get biased testimony, but Zimmerman's family isn't allowed to witness this. So you,
well,
you've already got
at one point the judge had actually blocked the defenses. If he blocks the defenses, audio expert recording, how can they not block the prosecution?
They've actually blocked two of the audio so-called experts. They've still got audio experts in there, but they did block two of them because they said that the science that these two particular audio experts used was not recognized It was not recognized
forensic.
Being reliable. Yeah, it was not recognized being reliable thing. So when we look at that in play, I understood that, and I've got no problem with that. But they're still going to have audio experts. But I find it a contrast on here. You're doing everything you can to make sure that you get this end result. And then, of course, you've got six jurors, and all six jurors are women. No offense here, folks. But mothers don't like their babies being killed. So it seems to me that now you have a stacked jury as well. They're going to sit here and portray this picture of Trayvon as this 12- or 13-year-old kid who looks like the most innocent thing in the world. And these mothers are going to see that and say, oh, that poor baby. So now you've got a stacked jury. You've got a stacked judge. You've got a prosecution who can't put on a case. It's really interesting, though, because I think it was Thursday, Jonathan Good. And Ed Martin, weigh in any time, man. I'm not trying to keep anybody out here. But Jonathan Good, he lives in the same complex as Zimmerman does, said that he heard noises behind his townhouse. And when he looked, he saw what looked like a fight. He stepped outside. He yelled, "What's going on?" and "Stop it." And he said what he witnessed was there were strikes being thrown and punches being thrown. He said he could only see one person at first, but seconds later he saw two people laying flat, one on top of the other in the grass. The person in dark clothing was on top of a person with a lighter complexion wearing red or white clothing. That's according to Jonathan Good. Now, it's interesting here because Jonathan Good has no criminal record. Jonathan Good hasn't lied in his testimony. He's been consistent throughout, unlike Trayvon Martin's girlfriend. And, oh, by the way, Trayvon Martin was wearing a dark hoodie, sweatshirt, and George Zimmerman was wearing a red light clothing. So his testimony tells us that Zimmerman was on the ground, which would verify the cuts on the back of his head being pounded. It would verify the broken nose or the bloody nose, and Trayvon was on top. So, you know, I don't get this whole scenario, Martin. How about you?
When you were saying we're going here, I'm thinking, oh, God. truthfully, I think our friend Dale Gillespie summed it up way back when, before all the evidence even came out. And look, we got two people who are out looking for trouble, and they found each other. And to me, that's what it comes down to. They're going to debate the evidence and stuff. I think any of the exclusions that have occurred that might have tilted the proceedings towards the prosecution, a little more than grounds for an appeal, to be honest with you. So,
I agree.
Yeah, I wish they'd have let all the evidence in so we don't have to go through this crap again. But if he's found guilty, we're going to go through it again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's I, I from what I've heard, and again, we haven't, you know, we haven't heard everything, and obviously some of it's suppressed, some of it's just not coming out. But I think Zimmerman is probably not guilty of a murder type charge, but you know, when the cops tell you not to get involved and you're packing a gun and you go after, you know, to confront somebody, that's not exactly legal either. I would, you know, I think it's a charge.
Well, now, wait a minute.
I think that they went for the kill. They let the media
Well, there's
call
a different
shot.
Side
they
of that.
For,
there's a different side of that, because when you listen to the 911 call, you know, the cops had asked him to tell him what street and everything else he was at, and he wasn't sure of the intersection because he'd been around the place a little bit, you know, but he said he lost them, and they, you know, and the dispatcher he was talking to, you know, you can't see him anymore. He says, no, I'll find him, or something along that line. So anyway, he goes out of his vehicle and starts looking for him, and the dispatcher told him, sir, we don't want you to do that. Return to your vehicle. And he said, okay. He acknowledged the order. I'm walking back to my vehicle. And according to Zimmerman, that's when Trayvon confronted him in his face and told him that you're going to die tonight. And then pounded him, punched him in the nose. He hit the ground. And then he started pounding his head into the pavement. When his jacket pulled up, Zimmerman said he had his concealed carry and his gun in his waistband. When his jacket pulled up, getting pounded, trying to cover himself, he realized he had the gun. He thought that Trayvon saw the gun, and he thought he better get to the gun before Trayvon did. So it's not like, you know, he was out intentionally trying to kill somebody or following this guy. As soon as he started, he told the dispatcher, he acknowledged, okay, I'll stop following and I'll return to my vehicle. And according to what he was reporting to dispatch, that's on recording, and according to Zimmerman himself, he was in the process of doing just that when Trayvon confronted him. I mean, there's a lot of ways to look at this, but the reality is I'm with you 100%, Ed, because I think our good friend Dale the Truth, he will be back in a few weeks, folks. He's got about another 3 or 4 weeks on hiatus. But I think our good friend Dale the Truth was right. You had two thugs looking for trouble. But the problem is one of them died, so now you have to decide. You're two troublemakers, but one, who instigated the trouble, and two, was reasonable force used to offset it. If you're getting your head pounded on the pavement, you already got a broken nose probably, you're bleeding out of it, it's swollen up, and you're getting your head pounded on the pavement, at some point you're going to fear for your life or you're going to lose consciousness. Now, I am not defending the fact that George Zimmerman was out there trying to act like a private investigator. I'm not defending that at all. And I'm not defending the fact that he allowed himself to be put in that position. I'm not defending that either, because as far as I'm concerned, Zimmerman had as much to do with what instigated this as anything else. But the question is, did he use reasonable force because he feared for his life? And somebody has to answer that question. In my opinion, based on the evidence, I think he did.
I'm going to say I think and Trayvon here to argue the case otherwise, and there were only two real witnesses, and only one of them's talking. But you know, I think back to what you said earlier with your Sharptons and your Jacksons, you know, the rabble rousers have actually sabotaged this hearing. It, like you say, any evidence is suppressed to set you up for an appeal. But then anything beyond that, I think they went for heavy a charge. What are they going for? Second degree murder?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly what they're going for.
Yeah, I think they could have come up with, you know, an aggravated, or they could have come up with something else, but when these activists and rabble rousers got involved, they had the ratchet to charge up. They couldn't go first degree murder because it's not like he was hunting him. So, you know, they're going for the maximum charge, and I think they're going to have a hard time, given the evidence that's coming out, they're going to have a hard time convicting. So, you know, I'm glad I don't live in Florida.
Well, you've also got another thing here. Man, we're going to start wrapping this up. We're running out of time quick, folks. I apologize. But we've also got another side here, too, because Lindsay Fogate, she's the physician's assistant who had treated George Zimmerman through time, okay? I mean, she's treated him before and everything else. But the day after the shooting, Lindsay Fogate saw George Zimmerman, and she said that, you know, he was stressed and very nauseous when he thought about the shooting. So this doesn't sound like a guy who was all, you know, happy he shot somebody. But when asked about his injuries, Fogate said that Zimmerman's nose appeared to be broken and his head had several cuts on the back of his head that could have been caused by head trauma, including, she testified to this, having his head slammed into concrete, as he has claimed. Now, the cuts did not require stitches, and, you know, she also went on to, with further questions, she also went on to tell everybody that, you know, Zimmerman had been intensely involved in mixed martial arts 3 days a week in August 2011, but he had problems sleeping and falling down, so he got involved in martial arts to try to help him with that. So the guy clearly, he has trouble sleeping and falling down. So the chance of him being able to stand there and hold his own with a history like that tells me, it just reinforces the fact that he had a balance problem. And for me personally, I'll let you guys in on a little secret. I suffer from something called Meniere's disease myself. I've had it for a few years now, and apparently it's something that's going to be with me forever. But part of the symptoms of Meniere's disease, especially when you go into a major episode, is you can't sleep and you're falling down all the time. Meniere's disease is an imbalance. It's a dizzy imbalance disorder, and there's really not anything they can do about it. You just have to live with it. So sometimes it's worse, sometimes it's not. But it's something you live with every day, and that's what I live with. So these symptoms that she's explaining to me are personal to me because I understand them. You know, and she recommended that Zimmerman go see, one, a psychologist for the stress from the shooting, and two, an ear, throat, nose doctor, which I see constantly because of this. So, you know, this brings another whole element to this equation that mainstream media didn't want to tell everybody. You see what I mean, Ed? I mean, this goes above and beyond, and that's the disturbing thing about it. You know, there's really not much more to say about that right now. Mayo, thanks for the call. Paul, I appreciate you calling earlier. We really do have to wrap up. It's about that time, Ed. Final thoughts, my friend.
Oh, final thoughts. Yeah. You know, I was kind of hoping we'd get on the Paula Deen thing a little bit today. But
well, I actually had planned to. And this is actually leading up.
I read up a little bit on it about some of the stuff she did. And now it's just sitting there with my head just like, what an idiot. But you know, final thoughts is, like I said, we always, you know, we blast the media all the time. And when it comes to the Trayvon thing, I tell you what, I'm proud to say I've not watched a single whatever. I don't even know where it's on. Because every time I hear the name Trayvon Martin or George Zimmerman, I think back to what Dale Gillespie said. And that was, what we have here is two people who are out looking for trouble. And when you do that, sooner or later, you find it. And that's really what it's come down to. And it, to me, the media is being lazy with it because there are hundreds upon hundreds, hell, sometimes even dozens of murders a weekend in some cities, and it's just a little glancing blow and move on. This is just lazy media. This is too. It's an unfortunate event, but it probably, honestly, since Trayvon Martin's been shot, has probably been repeated 1,000 times. It's just this one drew the attention of some activists, so for whatever reason, it therefore drew the attention of the media because it's an easy story. I mean, you don't have to investigate the financial crisis. You don't have to investigate anybody in harm's way to go to Syria to see what the hell is going on, or Afghanistan, or any place like that. You just put somebody down there, you take the stock footage, and you tell everybody, you know, you just pump up. You just keep repeating the same crap. Keep showing the same stock photos of a 13-year-old and stuff like that, and a George Zimmerman without a broken nose, whatever. It's just lazy media. It's all it is. And I understand that if you were in that area of Florida, this is a story. But this is not a national story. A national story is 500 people being killed in one city. That's a national story.
Well, I totally agree with you.
I don't watch it. I guess most people would tune it out. Aside from the, the facepalm moments that an ultra-rich person like Paula Deen can give us, in the way they conduct their lives, that's a non-story, too. Let it go. You know,
well,
people are dying, people are hungry, people are getting, when they graduate in schools, can't find jobs, they can't read. You know, we got so much more important stuff going on in this world right now, and we're fixated on this crap. So, like I say, when I see it come on TV, why don't everybody just do what I do? Just go, you know, and click their channel. Hell, you know, watch WWE if you have to.
Well, I'm a WWE fan, so that works for me. It is interesting, though. The reason that it makes it interesting, as you talk about lazy media and stuff, what makes it interesting is one of the biggest things that we talk about and we try to portray and we always call to attention is the fact that there is not a real media today. I mean, every liberal wants to say that Fox News is loaded and they have an agenda, and Fox News wants to say that CNN, MSNBC, and everybody else is loaded and they have agenda. And you know what? They're both right. They're both right. That's why, and that should be a good indication of why you have online media sources like LouisvillePolitics.com, you know, our whole site. You have these shows, BTR shows and stuff like that. That is why advertisers are pulling away from traditional print and media, and they are now spending, you know, a ton, billions of dollars in online advertising because this is where people are going for their news. On this show, we try to tell the whole world exactly what we think, and one of the reasons that Ed Martin is on here and I'm on here and why I like having this second person is because, as you can tell, we have conflicting opinions and differ, and that's what I want. I want the discussion. This is what we're supposed to have, are these discussions, not arguments, not threats, discussions. What's right, what's wrong? Because if we can't sit here and talk to each other about what's right and what's wrong and realize that none of us have all the answers, none of us are 100% right, then we can never get to that compromise that's going to help us move forward. And that is a disturbing thing here in America today. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, we will have a guest, Mr. John Bingham with StopFrontGate.com. I want you guys to check that out. We have got some disturbing stuff going on with Mayor Greg Fisher. Illegal, in my opinion, illegal places like LDG Development and Overlook Development, illegally obtaining federal funds for a project that should never be approved. It's going to involve Councilman James Peden and a whole host of others. This will be the first story in a couple of parts, and we're going to bring John Bingham on to discuss it all tomorrow night with you guys. So we'll look for you then, 7 o'clock right here, same time, same channel. In the meantime, have a great night, folks, and thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate it. Take care.